Hello, and welcome to Kinder Conversations live at 180 House. I'm Catherine.
And I'm Robin. We're the co-founders of Kinda, the women-led neuroaesthetic studio. We work as a bridge between academia and the creative industries, translating insight into creative projects to help art, culture, and technology work harder for people's well-being.
In this series, recorded at 180 House, we have been hosting informal conversations about the rise of neuroaesthetics, the exciting space at the intersection of neuroscience and the arts. In this new series, we focus on transformative experiences. What does that actually mean? How can we build them? And how can science and creative come together to drive transformation through experiences, gatherings, and even spaces themselves? In this episode, we're focusing on transformation and travel. Joining us is Dr. Lauren McDonald, researcher and doctor at the Centre for Psychedelic Research, Imperial College London, as well as co-founder and facilitator at Essence Medicine. And Sarah Doyle, Vice President, Global Brand Leader at Design Hotels. And of course, Robin Lando from our own studio. Let's head straight in. Hello, hello, hello. I'm Catherine Templer-Lewis. I'm from Kinder Studios, and this is the first on our series of transformative experiences. And the aim is to bring, which is the aim, in fact, of our studio, to bring the arts and the sciences closer together. The reason being because we are so aware, our work is in neuroaesthetics, which I'll explain in a minute. We're so aware of this divide between what's going on in science and some incredible science in neuroscience and psychology and what's going on in the creative arts. And that when you start a conversation between these two sides, that's when real inspiration and impact occurs. And that's not just about science informing creative choices. It's also about the creativity that creatives hold, the understanding of the human experience, the understanding of how the real world works that can in turn inform science and progress science. Because we're at a sort of time where we have these interdisciplinary giant human challenges we have to solve. And we're really aware that we're only going to do that with an interdisciplinary conversation. So before I introduce my wonderful guests, I'll tell you a tiny bit about Kinder Studios. So we are a neuroaesthetic studio. It's the newest branch of neuroscience. It is the science of the aesthetic experience, which sounds fancy, but it's basically about how everything around you right now. I mean, just take a tiny look around you. What can you see? What can you hear? What can you feel under your feet? Everything that is informing your senses is impacting your brain and your body. And it can do so in a negative or a positive way. And we have the capacity to create environments or to put ourselves in environments, there's always nature, is always there, that can impact us positively. You know, this is what well-being means to us. Not just how well we are mentally and physically, but how well we can connect to ourselves, our emotions, how well we can connect to each other, how well we can connect to nature itself. So that's what we do at Kinder Studios. We're a creative studio that takes a lot of this new neuroscience and translates it into immersive or creative experiences, designs, products. And we also have a lab. And that lab and some of our wonderful researchers are here today, bravely come out of their normal labs and go with us into these experiences, be it inside a car, inside an art experience, inside a hotel room, to find out what is happening in our brains and our bodies, and in doing so, help us design better things, better for our well-being, better for our connection. So this whole series is going to be about a key word. We've had connection, we've had immersion last year, and this year is about transformation, which means many things to many people, and we're well aware that it means many things to many people. We were inspired by this new trend that we saw called transformative travel. And we're really aware that that can, you know, just be a trend. But so much of what we do in neuroscience is about transforming ourselves, about creating an awareness of who we are, how we're living our life, how we're reacting to the world, and then changing it for the better. So today we have some wonderful guests from both a background in sort of medicine and in psychology, and also from the hospitality industry and from Kinder Studios ourselves. To ask that question, how can we both use our expertise from science and from design and hospitality to make better experiences, to showcase what that dialogue does? So I'm quickly going to introduce you and then we'll kick off. But we're going to talk for about sort of 20, 30 minutes, but then we want to hear from you, because this has always been about your voices as well. How can you use this insight? How can you learn what we call science-informed design to design better things? So first of all, we have the wonderful Sarah Doyle. Hello. Thank you. Vice President, such a good title, isn't it? And global brand leader at Design Hotel. She's got over 20 years experience enhancing and advancing some of the world's most well-known travel and lifestyle brands. So welcome. And then Lauren McDonald, hello, who really has battled every train to get here. A doctor and a therapist at Imperial College Center for Psychedelic Research and co-founder and facilitator of Essence Medicine and psychedelic therapy educator. Welcome. So two people whose transformation could mean very different things. And at the end, last but definitely not least, is Robin Lando, a neuroaesthetic designer and expert, co-founder of the Women-Led. I should say we're all women on this stage because we are a women-led studio itself, and we think there needs to be more visibility to women. It's nice to have an all-women stage here. All men are obviously welcome, just not on this stage today. Another time, perhaps. So Robin co-founds Kinda Studios with myself, and she's here to help show this need for translation between the two sides. So I'm going to sit down because I always stand way too much. And we're going to kick off. Sarah, you're right on my right. So this trend of transformative travel, I know it's one that with the future forecast, you know, Design Hotel is very invested in. We know you've been talking about neuroaesthetics. What was your response to that trend? Sort of what does transformation mean to you?
Well, good morning, everyone. So I get the big question first. Thank you.
You can throw it to someone else if you really want.
No, it's good. So just to give everyone some background, Design Hotels is the brand that I lead. And is everyone familiar with Design Hotels in the audience? No? Any hands? Yes? No? Okay. This is good. Brand awareness 101 right here. So Design Hotels is about 300 or so independently owned properties. And they're boutique properties. They're usually under about 50 rooms, so quite small. And we work directly with our owners, who a lot of them come from backgrounds like tech, fashion, and never had a background in hospitality, but had a dream to open a hotel. Must be nice, right? And with that, we see a lot of new ideas. And this idea of transformational travel is something that our owners and our properties are really always pushing the boundaries and experimenting with new things in hospitality. And transformational travel is the word transformational, especially in our business. We hear it a lot now. And it's a big word. And we're seeing a big shift right now in the way people want to experience travel, especially post-pandemic, which now feels like 10 years ago. But what's incredible about that pandemic was what happened in travel after, and how we had the ability to be resilient and to adapt our ways. And what we're seeing more now in our business is that people are seeking travel that is more connected, that is more conscious, and they're really taking a step back and thinking about how they travel, what they want to experience, and really things that were maybe little things back in the day are now big things. And I hope that answers your big question in a roundabout way, but it's really changing and evolving the way people are choosing to travel.
And I think that's a really important point. You know, we have this choice in the way we experience the world, and this choice is changing what we want, whether that's a travel experience or an art experience, or even, you know, we look at industries such as sort of automotive industries, the way we, you know, the things we buy. And what is interesting about that is that I love the fact that you said it can be a small thing as well. You know, we really do believe that transformation, you know, doesn't have to be this lofty term. So it's interesting to go back to its source. You know, where has this word transformation come from, and how is it filtering out into the world? And for that, I'm going to ask your perspective, Lauren. You know, transformation, what does it mean to you? Because that's really interesting to see how it then sort of ends up further down the line. Where's its origin?
Hello, good morning, everyone. And As Catherine said, so I've been working at the Center for Psychedelic Research at Imperial for the last 2 years. And then I also run psychedelic retreats in the Netherlands as well. So I've kind of had a foot in both the clinical, medical, psychedelic space, but also the transformative travel space for a few years now. And I was thinking about this word transformation on the way here and how it relates to my work and what I've seen really in patients, participants over the last few years. And I think for me, when we think about, so often when we think about transformation, we think about this huge shift or this change. But increasingly, especially through psychedelic therapy and the kind of psychedelic work that I do, I really feel that transformation is actually just a returning, a coming home to ourselves, a remembering, like a coming back to wholeness, fullness, like our fullest expression without all our limiting beliefs. And, you know, once we've kind of healed our trauma and really done that inner work, that is the transformation. And it doesn't have to be huge, that's it. It can be really subtle. And of course, sometimes on the retreats, I see huge experiences. People have such profound healing journeys during that peak psychedelic experience. So it can be a very kind of huge, kind of profound experience that happens quickly. But often these experiences, these kind of peak experiences, they're not so much transformative in themselves. It's what happens next. So it's what we call integration in psychedelic therapy. It's like, okay, so you've had these insights, you've had these downloads, you've maybe touched the divine, the kind of mystical, and then you have to come back to everyday life. And what do you do with that? What do you do with that experience? How do you take it into your daily life? And that's when all the kind of the smaller practices, the daily practices really, really help you to kind of maintain that transformation and to just stay connected to yourself. And I think the word connection is going to come up a lot. I know you've already covered that in another panel, but the psychedelics, that's what they really are. They help us connect more deeply to ourselves, to each other, to nature, to the cosmos. So, yeah, it's transformative in that way as well.
Thank you. So to me, that's really exciting because we have these two sort of industries. I mean, I know research is an industry as well, who are both looking at transformation through sort of different lenses. For you, it's about the everyday experience. For you, it's about this, you know, your research is rooted in psychedelics. Now, obviously, I want to sort of stay up top that we're really aware that psychedelic tourism does have a lot of controversy around, so that's not what we're here to discuss today, but we just wanted to flag that. But what we're really interested in is how you take research like yours, Lauren, and then translate it into the sort of the more everyday experiences that a hotel, a hospitality offering can provide, which is why I'm going to bring you in, Robin, because this is what you do on a daily basis. Bring these two sides together in a way that means that your research can come out of its research space. And, you know, the travel industry is an incredible opportunity to integrate this research into design. So Robin, how would you bring these two sides together?
Well, it's been so wonderful hearing both of you speak about it from different perspectives. And Lauren, it's been really fascinating hearing you speak about some of these things, because anybody who's probably heard me speak before, Catherine definitely knows, one of my favorite things to do is redefine what words mean. Transformation is one of those words that can feel really grandiose and really feel like transformed, uplifted, like I need to have these big vision quests. And what I always say actually is transformation is really just an experience of feeling different from where you started. It can literally be just smiling at a stranger on the street and realizing that you're not in a bad mood anymore. That really transforms your mood. So it's understanding that things are small and gradual. And once you break things apart in that way, you can understand how to apply it into various designs. And so, you know, Lauren already said it, but for us, really, transformation at Kinda Studios means connecting to your deeper self. You know, we're so distracted by things a lot of the time, but it's that sense of coming home and really integrating these new views that you've gathered. So we've broken down transformation into kind of three drivers that really contribute to it. And the first one is a sense of meaning, which, again, I really love to bang on about meaning, but we'll save that maybe for a whole another talk. But meaning is really this understanding of what's relevant to you. You know, how is it reflecting of your own self? If it's not meaningful for you, it can't really deliver some sort of impact. It doesn't necessarily have a feeling or sensation attached to it. If something is meaningful, then it's going to drive some sort of change. And of course, in the psychedelic experience, it's this real amplification of meaning that contributes to a lot of these, you know, large-scale changes that we see. The second driver of transformation that we have is a sense of discovery. And so discovery is perhaps more of a mental state that changes your perspective on something. You know, changes your perspective, maybe offers a sense of expansion, and then you're forced to maybe integrate this new discovery into, you know, thinking about how you might think about yourself differently or how you might appear in the world differently. And then the last driver of transformation we have is connectedness. As Catherine said, we did panels on this last year. We break down connectedness into three areas: connection to yourself, connection to others, and connection to our environments, whether that's the built environment, the natural environment, or, you know, the greater cosmic environment that we're living in. And so it's this feeling connected. And what we do is we look at all these different drivers and how we can activate them. So when we think about applying it into designs, we're really thinking about, okay, how can we activate these drivers? So we've come up with some various pillars that maybe we can speak about afterwards, but it's really looking at perhaps how we can root people into the senses, how you can get people into a shifted state through these design elements that can kind of lead to these states of access, because they're not so easy to do on our own, but we don't need to, for example, do a psychedelic experience. It might be for some people, but what we do is really look at, okay, what do we know? What have we learned from psychedelic therapy about how it affects the brain and the body? And how can we reapply that into various design elements to stimulate the brain in a similar way, to stimulate the body in a similar way through sensory elements, through entertaining experiences that will lead to a similar result?
Thank you. So it's about sort of turning this research into design pillars in a way that can be used. And so you have huge experience designing, or, you know, being the driver behind big campaigns. And how would you use this sort of information? Is it something that you, I mean, think, well, my creatives know this already? Is there, or are there examples of where you think, yes, this is a place we could use science and it could help drive design? You know, are there examples or things that you're seeing that are based in connection and you're like, yes, this could be amplified by science?
Yes, actually, I have so many ideas in my head swirling right now of examples of our properties, but ultimately, when you look at what you're researching and studying, it goes to learning and new experiences and getting more connected with yourself. And I mean, when you travel, that's what you do. You get out of your day to day, you leave home, you look at things in a different perspective. And so with our properties, what we're seeing is this opportunity to, and again, that's a big word, transformation, but to transform, but in ways that are connected to nature, to community. You know, we're seeing people want to, and I know you concentrated on this on a maybe your last panel, this idea of community and connecting, but
there's always a space for it to come back.
It is. It's simple now because people want to get away from their phone and, like today, want to be together and learn things from people you wouldn't necessarily speak to. And with this idea of community, we are exploring one theme within, we just published I'll call it a trend report. We're calling it the further forecast. And there's about six different themes in this. And one of them is called the age of awe, which is something we just touched on around the idea of connecting to moments of beauty and joy and kind of this less superficial wellness, but more holistic wellness, connecting to you. So where I'm going with this, which is kind of a roundabout way, is we're seeing our properties offer experiences that people are now willing to, you know, pay a bit more for because they are more connected to nature, to community. One of our properties in the middle of nowhere, actually, in Italy, it's called Eremito, which means monk in Italian. And this is a converted monastery, and probably 90% of people who go there are single travelers. looking to just strip down the barriers and be with themselves. I went there about 6 months ago and I slept in a twin bed, a single bed. In the room, there was basics. I mean, there were no frette sheets. There were no, it was very basic, but it forced you to really realize what you need in life is basic, and you have no Wi-Fi. So if you're looking to connect with someone you love and tell them you're okay, you have to walk outside and find that one spot. And you're given just, you know, a notebook with a pen or a pencil. And the dinner that is hosted in the evening, it's a silent dinner. So you eat in silence. And I don't know if anyone here has done this.
I'm sure you have here. I did recently. Also, my friend in the audience has as well. You taste so much more.
You really taste more, but your mind goes in so many different directions. At least for me, it was therapeutic to sit and eat without speaking, because all you can think about is what you're eating, but your mind starts to just go in different ways. Like when you go to the ballet and you start to kind of enter that dreamy state. And the idea of just sitting and not talking seems so simple, but it's not something you normally do. So to get out of that state of comfort with a community that's along with you is something special that can be done in a very small way.
And I think that's really important. Now, I should say the reason why Robin was doing it, she was at a Buddhist monastery. And so I think it exemplifies this opportunity. And, you know, we are so craving these spaces that are outside our everyday. Now, of course, not everybody can access, you know, the offerings of the hospitality industry. And I'm, you know, well aware of that. But it is this space where these can happen. And I think the danger is that we see trends in hospitality like transformative travel and we think, oh, it's just a trend. But actually, these are rooted in really important well-being pillars. Now, obviously, one of the things that I know are shared pillars of your work as well, community, connection to nature, or, you know, these very powerful things. And so it's wonderful to see that naturally the creative industry is picking up on these. So, you know, what there resonates with you and the work that you do to amplify these pillars and the impact they can have on people.
It's funny, as you were speaking about dinners, like silent dinners. Sometimes on the retreats, we have silent dinners, but we've also done blindfold dinners, which just is another kind of level of really having to kind of be with your senses and be with yourself as well, because you're not chatting around the dinner table. But yeah, that just came to me then. Yeah, I mean, that's it. I think the work I do in the clinical setting is very different to the retreat work. So even though obviously I'm working, I mainly work with psilocybin, so magic mushrooms. That's the kind of medicine that I'm most familiar with and work about the most with. But yeah, on the retreats themselves, the reason I've actually just literally just left my role at Imperial, for the reason that I've been there for 2 years. It's been amazing. I've learned so much about psychedelic therapy, and I'm so passionate about psychedelic therapy. I'm really excited that Australia's now legalized it. I'm sure America's going to follow suit very soon across, you know, some states already have. And then maybe at some point the UK will catch up. I don't know how long it's going to be. I used to say, you know, a year, 18 months. I think realistically we're looking still at 2 or 3 years. So I am really passionate about the clinical kind of space for psychedelic therapy. But the reason I've left my clinical role is just because the more work I did on the retreats, the more passionate I became about how community is medicine. Like, we would sit in these big sharing circles, and this was before even psychedelics, it was before the ceremony day. It was just, I was just in awe of how healing and powerful it was to just sit in circle with 15 other strangers and to really kind of feel each other's hearts, like see each other's hearts, meet each other in that deeper space. Without our labels, you know, kind of leaving everything else at the door. We also invite, it's a strong invitation for people to give in their phones at the beginning of the retreat. And there's something about that, like just the presence that comes, people aren't distracted, just fully, fully there. And it is community. And there's something about the group model that I'm so interested about when it's combined with psychedelic work as well. And obviously Indigenous cultures have been holding ceremonies in this way for millennia. This is not new by any means. But I'm interested how, yeah, the intersection, like the transformative travel, how do we bring all of this together? How do we weave it together in a way that's affordable, accessible, like also being kind of giving back to the communities, the cultures that have carried the kind of wisdom for so long. And then there's a sense that I'm concerned, at least in the medical space, that it's going to be sanitized and we're going to lose the kind of ancient wisdom and the spirituality that is so important. So I'm at this kind of personal career kind of moment where I'm like, okay, how do I weave science and spirit, science and sacred, and then bringing in the community aspects, making sure nature's there, because, you know, on the retreats, nature's such a big part of them, both in the preparation, but also in the integration afterwards. And time and time again, you just hear people saying months after a psychedelic experience that they feel, yes, connected to themselves and others, but deeply connected to nature. So I think, into your point about like, how can design come in? I think definitely with the integration of psychedelic experiences, whether it's going to be helping with like journaling, deeper nature connection. I recently worked with a VR company, and I've always been really a bit, I think it's just that in my head, it's like, we need less technology, not more technology. So I was a bit hesitant to kind of explore this, but I was blown away by what they've created. And it's using all of the principles of what psychedelics give us, but without having to take a psychedelic. You can put the VR headset on and the program takes you to a place of feeling interconnected, feeling awe, you know, experiencing these big emotions. So I think there's so much kind of scope, and we're really at the beginning. Yeah.
I just have something to add to that.
No, you're nodding. Please do.
I think you touched on something that is also something we're thinking about, is this idea that these experiences are such a luxury for those who can afford them. And when you stay at a property and pay $400 to $500 a night, that is a very small group of people who can go and experience this. And how can we democratize things more so that people can really, others can also partake in this? And I do see our hotels almost as a testing ground for this and serving as a platform, but also we need to be careful about how we do things, because we have, at one of our properties in Jamaica, Rock House, we have a psilocybin retreat. Actually, Katie on my team in the corner had the pleasure of testing it out. So we can ask her after how that was. But
how transformed you are.
Yes, Katie. You're a different woman now, right? Completely. But when we offer things like that, we need to make sure that you have the right trained experts to really, guide the group as you understand and what you do, because that's my concern, is that these things will become so popular that you can do them almost anywhere and they won't be the right experience. And you could walk away from something with a bad experience that can impact you. So I do think it's something we need to be careful about in two ways. It's the training, and it's also, ensuring that we take this opportunity and bring it to more people in the right way, and not keep it in this small society of people who can afford it.
Yeah, and there's a really good point. And everything that we do is at Kinder Studios is about how do we make these things more accessible, make this information more accessible. And I sort of, and I love that point that you make there. And also, Lauren, that you use the word there, which I think is important to highlight, is wisdom. You know, we talk about scientific research, and of course you've done scientific research at Imperial College, but you're also really aware of the wisdom that is out there, you know, and that is just as important. You know, and we should never forget that there's a lot of more sort of, yeah, non-Western scientific paradigms and understanding and insight that can be important to us all, to how we design things, and that is, yeah, of equal importance. And the second thing I think, and which is perhaps a clue to that all, is, you know, you talked about the VR. We have all this information from psychedelic research, but then how do we potentially make it more accessible for places where you cannot take psychedelics, for designing for the everyday, where, you know, how can you take that information and go, okay, we know this is so powerful to connect us to ourselves, to connect us to others. You know, nature connection is the only known driver of pro-ecological behavior. If your nature connection goes up, then your behavior towards the environment changes. You know, we know that connection to others is one of our key survival needs. You know, we generally, it without it, our mental and physical health is absolutely degraded, and connection to self, of course, is the core to how we process our emotions. So Robin, what are your sort of thoughts on, you know, how we can use this in a non-psychedelic space, and also maybe what are the limitations? What more do we need to do to make all this knowledge transfer work?
Well, I also just wanted to say that I love conversations like this, where every single thing that everyone is saying, I'm like, oh my God, I have something to say about that, and I just want to respond immediately. But there's been so many amazing things shared, and I think, like, For me, the main theme that seems to be emerging is bringing it back to basics and simplicity. It's like we're paying a lot of money to get quiet because the world in which we live in is so noisy. And actually just being quiet offers a space for transformation. You know, even maybe just turning your phone off. I have a friend who turns her phone off every Sunday. It's a pretty difficult thing to do. I actually encourage any of you to just do a little personal retreat for a day. I've done a number of different experiences where you go through physical, emotional, mental detoxes, but a digital detox is part of it. I have to say the digital component is one of the most difficult aspects of it, to really be distant from your phone. But it's bringing to simplicity, you know, the themes that we think about a lot have already emerged. You know, it's a sense of ritual. So this idea of even eating in silence with other people in itself is a ritual. So where I went over the New Year's period was a place called Plum Village, which is a Buddhist monastery in France, which I actually first heard about from Catherine and then from our friend Sophie Schnapp, who's in the audience here from Earth Percent. And it's really incredible what happens when you just share in a space with other people who are eating in silence. You know, it also offers a really great probably video reel of like watching loads of people eat with their eyes closed. quite wonderful. But even the sense of sharing a meal with somebody, you know, what is that? What does that ritual mean, really? That can offer a sense of transformation. You know, even coming back to nature, as we said, this idea of awe and wonder. And you don't necessarily need to go like to the Himalayas or to the farthest depths. You can notice a sense of awe and wonder in your everyday experiences. So it's really understanding, when we strip it back, what is it about? And using tools like technology are, of course, really important. They help us get to places we wouldn't maybe to get to go. But it's really understanding, what can we use that's at our doorstep? You know, how can we use the tools that are available to us more so? So we talk a lot about the senses in our work, and the fact that actually, maybe we'll save this for the next talk, we have a number of senses even beyond the five. That are working with us all the time. And if we can tap more deeply into them, we can actually experience ourselves differently. And that offers a way to feel transformed. So any experience we have where we're immersed in nature, the smells, the sounds of nature, as we talked about, the taste of the food, sharing in the rituals with others, and ultimately immersing ourselves in various multisensory integration. So these are kind of all the little natural tools we look at about how we can amplify them further. And so I think that really, like, the invitation for, you know, when you leave here today is, think about in your life maybe actually what you can strip back, and once you strip something back, what sense of expansion that offers. You know, when you go quiet somewhere, where does it offer a place for you to travel inwards? You know, I think the name of this talk is traveling inwards to expand outwards, right? And so that is really a profound, even thought of thinking about that can really change your experience of yourself in the world.
And I think I'd forgotten that was our byline. That's what happens when you have Christmas in between submitting something. And I think that's a really good point, Robin, a really good point to, you know, I know not everyone here is from the travel industry. Some people are from science as well. Like, how can you use these tools in your own design, be it the design of a product, be it the design of a campaign? You know, these are tools that can be used in any way. So I think on that, actually, I'm going to open it up because that note on community, which is really important, you know, and that's why I've always had a huge fondness for the travel and hospitality industry, because, you know, I am someone who's not very good, despite knowing all the tools, of curating my own life in a way that enhances connection and expansion. And I think it is when I travel, when I engage with the hospitality industry, that when it's curated well, you know, that sort of responsibility is taken off me. Someone has curated a space where I can connect with myself, I can connect with others. And that feels such a privilege sometimes. There are very few places you can go where someone has really intentionally thought about every aspect of your environment, you know, every sense around you. And that to me is such a privilege. And I understand that not everyone can have that privilege, but it is an amazing offering that is out there. Thank you so much to our guests, Dr. Lauren McDonald and Sarah Doyle, for an inspiring conversation on the intersection of art, science and technology and the power of spaces and experiences to transform us as individuals and collectives. And thank you, of course, to 180 House for hosting this session.